Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 21st day of Shavat. This responsum is a reminder of the fact that Mishivim, that the respondents are sometimes, are often dealing with, almost always, dealing with actual human beings who have deep and desperate needs. And this is actually one of the most moving tshuvot I've come across in this whole project. It's a tshuva of Rav Herzog. It's Heichal Yitzchak Orech Chaim Simon Lamed Dalid. And the tshuva is preceded with some words of introduction, because the tshuva is dated Kfar. The tshuva is dated Kfar Etzion, Kaf Aleph Shvat, the 21st of Shvat of Tufshin Chet, which was 1948, but before the State of Israel was declared. And it's a reminder that the Etzion block of settlements of back then, they're now Baruch Hashem recreated and renewed, but at the time in 1947-48, they came under attack soon after the partition plan was declared. Before Israel had declared its independence, the Arabs attacked already, and the British decided to stay out of the way of all of these things, and it's a complicated history, and I'm not pretending I'm going to capture the whole history of that, but the Etzion block of settlements was under attack and under siege, and so in Kfar Etzion, they were under siege, and they're holding the line, I think, is eventually credited, my understanding is eventually credited with the fact that Yerushalayim didn't fall, that this, they're standing in the road, and they're preventing the Arabs from getting through there, stopped the Arabs from being able to completely encircle Yerushalayim, and that led to a whole thing, but ended up with the new city of Yerushalayim, at least not being, falling into Arab hands. So there's a lot of story back here, and as part of presenting the tshuva, the people who edited the volume of Heichal Yitzchak included a note of explanation dated the 13th of Adar of Tufshin Lamed Aleph, meaning I think Rav Herzog's tshuva weren't printed until then, or this version of them, this edition, they weren't printed until the 1970s. This is the 13th of Adar of 1971, where a man named Dov Noel, who was the Mazkir, which is like the general secretary of Kfar Etzion, which I think was Kfar Etzion, was a kibbutz like it is today, and he was the general secretary of that kibbutz, and in 1948, and he survived the war, which wasn't so common for the fighters at Gush Etzion, and he gave an explanation. Now, he passed away on the, I looked him up, he passed away on the 21st of Tammuz of Tufshin Nun of 1990, and he left behind at least two sons. One of them is the professor Yisrael Noel, I think is Bar Ilan, and Rav Eliashiv Noel. Eliashiv, really, it's a beautiful name because Hashem should return us, you know what he's thinking of, who in fact is now the Rav of Kfar Etzion, or at least was when I found him online. So Dov Noel gives an introduction to this tshuva, and he says that the background was that caravans to Jerusalem, supply trucks to Yerushalayim started being attacked on the 28th of Kislev of Tufshin Chet of 28th of Kislev, I think probably 1947, maybe early 1948, and the caravans started getting attacked, so it became clear that the Arabs were trying to put a siege around Yerushalayim, and then to do that, they had to put a siege around Gush Etzion. So Gush is under siege. The people killed in that first attack, I mean, the members, they were sending supply trains to Yerushalayim, groups of supplies to Yerushalayim, that one got attacked. People got killed. On the day of the funeral of the people who were killed in that attack, Kfar Etzion got a telegram from Rav Herzog. And Rav Herzog says, "Bedema uvitzar," with sadness, tears, silence, but pain, "I'm writing to you some words of comfort, and I'm telling you to be strong, and anything you need to do, anything you need to do for the defense of your settlement, do and don't worry about it. Build anything you need to build and don't think about Shabbos." This is what Herzog says proactively. That again, I think it's an image we don't recognize, and it's an image of, to me, the chief rabbinate of Eretz Yisrael functioning at his best today, sadly, for some valid reasons and for some other reasons. The chief rabbinate is under great attack at Eretz Yisrael, some of it, much of it perhaps self-inflicted. So what is today is today. But Rav Herzog's job here, as we've seen on other occasions, Rav Herzog was very involved in helping the Agunot from the Holocaust and from eventually the first war, the Israeli War of Independence. So it was an example of, and we've seen Rav Yosef's functioning in such ways as well. The chief rabbinate was a body of trying to maximize Torah observance among the Jewish people and trying to help dedicated, good, sincere Jewish people find their way to better observance than they currently have. And it's a model that I think people have even forgotten in the rush of today's politics. It's very sad. So if Herzog sends them a letter, says, "Listen, don't think about Shabbos. Do what you need to do. Not only are you allowed to do it, you're obligated to do it, because this is part of your role in helping try to save your lives and save Yerushalayim. And then, Hashem Yegen Aleichem, And Hashem should protect you and bring you great salvation. So we know the end of the story. That didn't happen in that situation. And it's also a reminder of deep, important religious issues that Rav Herzog isn't directly addressing, but is clearly assuming, which is that even as we believe in Hashem, and even we are sure that Hashem is the one who really operates all of these things, it's our job and obligation to do our part for it. And sometimes we won't get the salvation from Hashem that we want in a certain situation. So, you know, when Kfar Etzion, when the Gush finally fell, it was a terrible tragedy, personal tragedy. Many people died and lost their lives. Many people were exiled from their place. Many people's activity was a terrible tragedy. And one could, a cynic could look at that and say, see, this isn't a Kodesh Baruch Hu who wants us to have a state of our own, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we look today, we are fortunate enough to look today in 2017 and see what's there in Eretz Yisrael, and you can't even imagine the turnaround since then. So that's part of our role as Ma'aminim, as believers in Hashem, as those who serve Hashem. And Rav Herzog here is functioning in such a beautiful way. So he says that this they have to do. Now this Dov Noel says, most of our manpower then was put to guard duty and training and preparing a maslul aviranim, like a landing strip for planes. We'll see in the course of the tshuva why they wanted to do it. So sometimes they had to go out and do this on Shabbos. And some people, such a touching moment, some people had the custom or the practice while they were building a landing strip on Shabbat, which they knew they were allowed to because Herzog told them they were allowed to do, while they're building the landing strip on Shabbat, they would sing Zmiros to remember that it's Shabbat. And there were also some questions of communication with Yerushalayim, because it was very important for people psychologically as well as practically to have connections, either for the leadership of the kibbutz. They needed to know what to do and what not to do and how to do things and how to plan things. And then for regular people, it was just a question of human contact with their family and friends, especially the ones that had wives and children who had already been evacuated. Then you wanted to have connection. And yet, most of the caravans that came to Gush came on Shabbos. And that was because the manpower that went to supplying Yerushalayim was busy during the week supplying Yerushalayim. So when they would get to Gush, it would be on Shabbat, and they'd have to quickly unload and reload whatever they're going to reload, because you didn't want the Arabs to figure out that a caravan had come to Gush, because then they would block the roads and then you'd have a tragedy, etc. So these were the kinds of issues that were coming up in the tshuva, because they wrote. So now they wrote to Rav Herzog on the 21st of Shabbat to find out how to handle the situation that we're about to see in our discussion. I do recognize, and I apologize if you don't like it, but 21st of Shabbat here is the date of the question, not, I don't think, of the date of the answer. And so it's a little bit of cheating in our project where I'm supposed to take Shavuot written on a certain day, but every so often I cheat on that too, because the 11th commandment of the rules of this responsive project are, I don't stick to the rules too much. Too specifically. I stick to them basically because I want to randomize. So now let's get to their questions and Rav Herzog's answers. First, let's do all of their questions because they'll give us a sense of what's going on. And let's remember, as we do, that Rav Herzog has already told them in a telegram, do whatever you need to do. So theoretically, we could easily imagine, groups of people who would say, well, we've been told we can do whatever we want to do. We don't need to ask Rav Herzog any more questions because he does do whatever we needed to do. But they chose to ask him questions anyway. So the questions were, how do we handle unloading the caravans? So we just thought to unload them, you know, at Shabbos, and what can we take off? What can we take off is a little less important than what can we put back in. So, for example, can we return the empty barrels for fuel? Meaning they're going to bring us fuel. We're going to take the fuel. We're going to put it into our own cases, whatever we're going to hold on. But those cases, the barrels were needed. Meaning if we don't send them back, then in Yerushalayim, wherever they're supplying us with the new fuel for the next time they send the caravan, they're not going to have anything to put it into for us. And they need them and we need them and we have to reuse them. So can we put those back on? Meaning that's a very interesting question, because the point is it's not directly needed for Shabbat and it's not directly needed for Pikuach Nefesh, saving anybody's lives, but it's sort of long distance needed. Can they give out letters on Shabbat? Because is that considered a need, or are these things that came from outside of Tzkum Shabbat, that came outside of the distance the Jews are allowed to travel on Shabbat, so they came as part of a Pikuach Nefesh thing, but now that they're in, can we give them out on Shabbat? And remember, they said that it can be a week or more. Later on in the Shuvah, they mentioned that it's often 10 days between caravans, so as somebody who's in the kibbutz doesn't get any connection from his family, it's very difficult. And that's an important aspect of questions of Pikuach Nefesh that don't always get recognized. With the mental project, usually the psychological side of it isn't so pressing that we'll say, well, you can violate Shabbat for it in these ways. But these are people who are under siege in the end, as we know, many of them were killed or went into captivity. So letters are very important to them. Fourth question was, can the mazkirut, the leadership of the kibbutz, open and deal with on Shabbat letters that have to do with issues related to the needs of the kibbutz in terms of supplies and defense. Okay, they reply to that, meaning the caravan driver would wait a brief period, but it was the job of the mazkirut, of the leadership, to read quickly the letters that came to them on these issues, and to, if they could, give a reply as soon as they could. Could they do that on Shabbat? Now, considering, again, this break, this often 10 days and more break in caravans, can Jews bring them mail? So that's, there's mail, there's different kinds of mail, right? There's mail that comes to the leadership and is specifically about war matters and supplies and defense and things like that. Then there are issues that come to the leadership on general issues of how to run the kibbutz or business of the kibbutz and stuff like that. It's always worth remembering that in wartime, even in siege time, some aspects of regular life have to go on too, just to keep things running, right? So can they deal with those things on Shabbat and give an answer on Shabbat? And then there's the mail that goes to members of the kibbutz who are not in the leadership, but their families are either elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael, or they're even in Chutz La'aretz, and that's a reminder that back then, many, many people in Eretz Yisrael, there weren't that many people in Eretz Yisrael, but many of them, their whole family was outside. They were like all Chayalim Bodudim, they were all like lone soldiers whose family was outside of Israel, and the families are worried about them, and they're worried about their families worrying about them. Could they read those letters? Could they get those letters on Shabbat? And can they answer those letters on Shabbat? And then sometimes you have non-Jews who come by. It could be Arabs they trusted, or it could be other non-Jews who come by on a Shabbat, and they're willing to take letters. Are you allowed to ask them to pass the letters? This is an Amir al-Nachri question. It's a question of, can we have a non-Jew act for us on Shabbat in ways that we don't act, we would not be allowed to act for ourselves? And in those situations, not that you sit down and write a letter because they're non-Jews. They would have letters already pre-written, right? You would write a letter whenever you got a chance to write a letter, but during the week before Shabbat, and then you have these letters packed all together, and can you give them to the non-Jew on a package? Meaning the only thing you're doing on Shabbat is taking this barrel, this the bundle of letters, and giving it to the non-Jew, but not all those letters are specifically Shabbat required related. Can you do that on Shabbat? Can you then also, the answer to this tshuva is going to be, this part of the tshuva is going to be even more interesting to me. You've got clothing or toys or objects that the women and children, when they were evacuated, left behind, and now they want it, and they say they need it desperately because they don't have things in Yerushalayim. So we're going to get to see, let's say, even things like winter coats. And they forgot to take with them, or they didn't realize they need to take them, or they hoped to come back soon before that would be a need. Can they send those? Right, so those count as a need for which some element of Shabbat can be violated. And then the landing strip question. So what happened was, there was on the 3rd of Shvat, this is being written on the 21st of Shvat, so 18 days earlier, there had been an attack, and there were people who were wounded, and some of the wounded were wounded so seriously that the local, they say, Hadrofiv, the doctors, they might be doctors, they might be medics, but the local medical staff didn't have the ability to care for their wounds. So the decision was made to try to make an airstrip. And the idea of an airstrip would be that if you have seriously wounded, the planes could come and fly in, and they could evacuate the wounded. Now, theoretically, also, they could bring in supplies better, because in those days, anti-aircraft artillery was much less developed, and therefore, it was somewhat easier to bring in planes than even to bring in caravans. So that was also part of the calculation. So what happened was, and in this particular situation, on Friday, the people who were building the airstrip said they weren't done, but they needed 2 or 3 days to finish. And so they wanted to continue on Shabbat to finish it as fast as possible, because you never know when you're going to have the ability to do so, because the people who could now have the time to build an airstrip, if an attack came, they wouldn't be able to build the airstrip because they'd be busy fighting off the attack or whatever it is, God forbid what would happen. So they wanted to, therefore, continue building the airstrip because now they have the time. That's a fascinating pikuach nefesh question. It is clearly pikuach nefesh to have the airstrip. That's step one of this question. It's clearly saving, it will save lives once the airstrip is built, because when people get injured, they'll need an airstrip, this, right? It would be like building a hospital. So usually we don't say you can build a hospital on Shabbat because we don't think that there's going to be something coming in the way and things take the time to take. But here the claim is we can finish in 2 or 3 days. We never know, we really never know when a desperate need is going to come. Can we therefore build it on Shabbat? Fascinating. Shabbat, is that pikuach nefesh? Is that pikuach nefesh? Right? It's not pikuach nefesh right now, because you're not, what you're doing on Shabbat, meaning if they were going to finish the airstrip on Shabbat, they said we just need 17 more hours, if we work really hard we'll finish it on Shabbat, then I think you could even argue that there's more of a case to be made that it's active pikuach nefesh, and of course they can do it because they'll finish on a Shabbat, but here they know they won't finish on a Shabbat, so on this Shabbat they're not going to save lives. How are they going to save lives? They might save lives, the idea is they'll save lives, because by virtue of the fact that they'll finish it by doing Shabbat work, let's say, and Sunday work and Monday work, they'll finish it. If somebody on Monday afternoon or Tuesday This will address it. Whereas if they didn't build it on Shabbat, all those Tuesday people would be have a problem. But also, maybe they won't have time Sunday, Monday. If they push it off to Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, they won't have time to build Sunday, Monday, Tuesday because something will happen. And so that's the question. On this question, the questioner says, we didn't know what to do. Right? This is 18 days later. So we've already, the situation has already passed. But they want to know about it for the future. We didn't know what to do. There was a debate about it. In the end, we decided, yes, to build the airstrip because we thought it was needed because of your original telegram in which you said that anything that's necessary for the safety and security of people in the kibbutz, in the Gush Etzion, we could build it, therefore we did it. But we want to know how to handle it in the future, and we hope that you'll answer us very quickly. Signed, Dovnal. So I have to pause, because just can you imagine asking such questions? It's not perhaps the same thing as there's a remarkable sefer that I heard as a teenager. You know, everybody talks about it, Shoot Me Ma'amakim, which was, I think, the Blazhev Rav, was about questions he got in the concentration camps, halakhic questions. So the idea of people in concentration camps having the presence of mind and the dedication to Kodesh Baruch Hu, to Hashem, to ask halakhic questions about how to handle that terrible situation, that's a level. An unbelievable level. And here, too, you have people who are working hard and they're, again, risking their lives, and their lives are in danger and they're in a terrible situation, and yet they have the presence of mind and the dedication to Kodesh Baruch Hu to ask the questions and to wait for the answers, to be guided by the answers. So that's something that shouldn't be taken lightly and shouldn't be left without pausing for respect and for admiration for the dedication. And Rav Herzog more than rises to the occasion. He answers their questions. So Herzog says, you know, my dear brethren, Kfar Etzion, and let's remember, he's in Yerushalayim, which is not so safe or secure at the time either. Hashem should protect you, and you'll have a full Yeshua, b'mheira. Right? So here are your answers. First of all, in our present situation, he says that all these supply caravans are count as pikuach nefesh, because if you don't unload, then you might have a famine, right? These are food supplies. So now, again, this is a question of looking at pikuach nefesh in the broad terms and thinking about when we do and don't allow ourselves to do that, right? His answer is going to be, you never know, ki mi yodea ma yelad yom is a pasuk. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow. Now, we ordinarily don't allow ourselves to say that, because ordinarily the Gemara says, if you have food today and you're stuck about what's going on tomorrow, you're miktanei amana, you're lacking in faith and security. And we wouldn't ordinarily say, you can imagine many Jews saying, if I don't work on Shabbos, I don't know if I'll have enough food for next week. You had this in the early 20th century in America, people would get fired if they didn't go to work on Shabbos, and they really struggle financially. So you can easily imagine them saying the same thing. It's pikuach nefesh, I have to go to work on Shabbos. So that's not a general answer that we give if you're uncertain about where you're going to get your livelihood. But Rav Herzog is saying, in your situation, where if you don't unload the truck with the food, there's a real danger. He means there's an active danger of famine right there. Because if no caravan comes again, you reject this caravan because it didn't come on during the week, and therefore he says it's mutar. I have no question that he was right. I'm not in any way questioning his psak. I'm just pointing out these are complicated halakhic issues. You can easily imagine people taking too far, because I can easily imagine somebody saying, listen, if I'm going to work this Shabbos, I'm going to have a problem. I'm going to run out of money. And then maybe I'll have a famine. So rather I won't have any money and we're starving. So the answer is that's too far down the road. But how you calculate that road, what's a road on which I can say my actions now, even though right now I have a full refrigerator and right now I have all the food that I need for today and tomorrow and the next day, but the ability to say, but I have reasonable cause to say that if I don't take this food off the truck now, in 10 days I might have a famine and I might have a situation. That's a you need a Herzog to be able to say, yes, in this situation, that's what's going on, which absolutely was. But pay attention to the questions and to the problems. When it comes to the barrels and the holders for the fuel, he says there's no issue of muksa, there's no issue of uvnin dechol, because the getting fuel and having packaging so that you can get more fuel in the future is a vital need, and therefore returning it to the city, to Yerushalayim, or wherever it came from, is also part of pikuach nefesh, and therefore you're allowed to do that as well. Again, this is pikuach nefesh in its broadest terms, worth paying attention to. Then, The kibbutz itself, he says, is like an ira mukefet choma, because it's got walls all around it, and it's fencing all around it, and you close the gates at night, so that makes it all a one area, right? That's halacha in terms of Eruvin, too. We're thinking about that. When you have an actual wall around an area, and it's been closed in for the purpose of living in it, and it's completely closed in, so the need for Eruvin in those issues is much smaller, and it all counts as dalet amot in terms of carrying, and therefore there's no tchum issue. So once the letters came from there within the kibbutz, there's no problem of carrying them. Now, you could say that the people who brought them, though, violated Shabbat, or they didn't violate Shabbat because they were allowed to do so, as Herzog says, but they broke an otherwise malach of Shabbat. They did an action that, in general cases, would have been a violation of Shabbat at Torah level, but you might have thought that, therefore, the letters should be a problem, but the answer is no, that since they did it for Pikuach Nefesh, that doesn't affect the letters, and therefore the letters can be read. Especially, he says, because while they did an action that's prohibited on Shabbat ordinarily by turning on the motor, that's considered a Torah violation. Their carrying of the letters or their bringing of the letters is not considered a full violation of Shabbat, because Rav Herzog says, and this is another interesting halakhic question that comes up but isn't the main topic here, so we won't spend a lot of time on it. He says that today, no Rishon HaRabim d'oraita. We don't think that we have public places at a Torah level. In his time, it might have been true. Today, there might be public places at a Torah level, even the ways that he means. He's referring to the fact that Rashi and Tosafot innovated the idea that unless you have 600,000 Jews on a particular street, on a particular thoroughfare daily, it doesn't become a Rishon HaRabim d'oraita. It doesn't become a Torah prohibition of carrying from a private space to a public space. So that became a fundamental psak for many, many city Eruvin that you would have. For many, many, to build an Eruv, let's say, in a place like Flatbush, where I grew up, one of the first steps you have to do is say, well, there's 600,000 people. And there was a question in Flatbush whether there might have been on Ocean Parkway, became a whole question. But one of the first steps is there's no 600,000 people, therefore, it's not a Rishon HaRabim at a Torah level. It is not a public thoroughfare at a biblical level, and therefore, et cetera, the Talmud conversation goes on. Here, he's applying that idea to say that therefore the letters didn't travel from a public space to a private space, and therefore they don't get any sort of books issues, any sort of issues that would mean that you can't read the letters, and therefore he thinks you can read the letters too. So there's a whole back and forth that he has, because there's two kinds of marbeh bishiurim. It's more of a complicated back and forth than I can do justice to here, and I want to get to the rest of the tshuva, but there's marbeh bishiurim where I add more to one action. So, for example, when the driver turns on the motor, you could say, well, if I put in more letters, he's turning on the motor for more than he would have to otherwise. That refers to things not an issue that comes up for various reasons. But then the other issue is that I'm being marbeh bishiurim, I've got more items in terms of carrying. So he says, Rav Poskei, most authorities don't think that kind of marbeh bishiurim is a problem in terms of muksa, for reasons that we don't want to get into. But then he throws in a note that I thought was very attention, because he takes something for granted that later becomes a topic of much debate. He says, we don't worry about reading the mail on Shabbos. It's brought by non-Jews, right? Here, too, the caravans are being driven sometimes by non-Jews. Didn't be brought from outside the tchum. We don't worry about it. We don't apply a din muksa to things that come outside the tchum. Now, like I said, I've heard many people who question that today. The question of newspapers, the question of mail, and things like that. Rav Herzog takes it for granted, not in terms of pikuach nefesh. He's just saying it's clear that we don't bother with that question. We don't treat that as the halakhic reality, and therefore, when we're going to apply it to Kfar Etzion, we also won't do it. Especially since there are letters among them that are a matter of pikuach nefesh, a matter of saving lives, and we can't require the drivers to differentiate, to go through all the letters and figure out which are which, because when it comes to pikuach nefesh, the obligation is to do it as quickly as possible, because we think that usually and often speed is of the essence in these situations, and therefore when they bring the letters, they're not violating anything. So they're not violating. Once the letters get to you in Kfar Etzion, you don't have to worry about it. And then he adds, he thinks this is especially true because be giving out the letters, and there's another aspect I actually saw once upon a time. He's not in the Bar Ilan project, so we never get to him now in this context. He's on the Bar Ilan response in the Bar Ilan data, CD-ROM, whatever the right term for the Bar Ilan thing is. But Rav Nachum Rabinovich of Ma'aleh Adumim has a few books of responsa. One of them I happen to have read, which was Shut Siach Nachum. It's a remarkable sefer, very important, very sensitive sefer, an remarkable version of how to write Tshuvot. And he there talks about after a terror attack, he is willing to imagine, not only imagine, he accepts and allows social workers and psychologists who are needed for, you know, trauma reaction. He thinks that could be qualified as pupil nefesh issue because people can be so psychologically debilitated by an attack, if you don't get them some kind of treatment and some kind of help right away, that could be a pupil nefesh issue. I thought that was an interesting claim. And then he adds, he could even imagine that the mayor of the town coming to visit the people who have been hurt in the attack or been affected by the attack, he can even possibly imagine that that qualify as pikuach nefesh as well, by which he means that possibly you would allow the mayor to, assuming the mayor cares about Shabbat, to violate Shabbat for the purposes of getting to see the people, because that too could be a need. So that was a remarkable tshuva of Rav Rabinovich. There's more to the tshuva. That's not our topic here, but it's relevant here because Rav Herzog is right here in 1948. Rav Herzog thinks that there is an obligation. He doesn't mean like a Torah mitzvah. He means an obligation, a halachically valid obligation to help people avoid and to prevent distress and worry on Shabbat. And that is a factor. He's not saying that you can do anything you want, right? You wouldn't say, oh, I think my mother wants to see me. I'm going to get in my car, turn on the car and drive because she wants to see me, and I'm going to help her not worry on Shabbat. So that, obviously you don't mean that. But there is a halakhic factor, halakhic importance to preventing worry and distress on Shabbat. And therefore, reading these letters, given the giving out these letters, given the factors that we've already said and the level of problem that there is or lack of problem there is, he thinks that's allowed. Aside from that, he says, and there's just a halakhic issue that he brings up that we don't always necessarily think about. He says, besides, if you ask the driver to differentiate letters that are vital from those that are not vital, the driver would be picking among letters. And there are those who hold. He's not clear that he holds this way. But at least the Aruch HaShulchan quotes those who hold. And I think the Aruch HaShulchan held that way as well, that you apply Borer, the Isser, the prohibition of separating what's not wanted from what's wanted. Right? Usually we think of it in terms of food. If you're eating food, you can't get rid of the non-wanted. That's Borer in order to get at the wanted stuff. So here, if you're going to put away some letters and not other letters, that'll be perhaps an action of Borer. And therefore, that weighs in on saying, we don't want to do that either. So to obligate the driver to differentiate among the letters, that would be a problem as well. Therefore, I think you can just give out the letters to whoever got letters. And then the question of opening the mail comes up, which he doesn't deal with extensively, but he fundamentally seems to think there's not such a big deal with opening the mail, because when you open the mail, you're tearing, you're destroying the envelope. Now you can say, well, but it's not so kilkul usually. Destroying things usually not prohibited on Shabbat. You could say, well, but it's not really kilkul, it's not really destroying, because you want the things, you want to read the letter, maybe therefore it's a ticket, he says, but it's not really, and therefore, because you're tearing the paper, and that's what really counts in terms of the paper, the envelope, and therefore he thinks it's okay, and he doesn't want to get into it. Yeah, he thinks maybe it's usher for in general, but it's not a problem here, because there's a subject picking up nefesh here. In terms of the leadership answering questions also, he says they can answer the ones that are pikuach nefesh issues, that are directly needed for the defense of the settlement and issues of defense, but the general things, those he doesn't think they can write. Oh, but on those also he thinks that if they can, if they have to write back, and if they can, it's not going to cause any delay, they should do it with their opposite hand. If they're right-handed, they should write it with their left hand, because that lowers the level of Shabbat violation. So notice how far along we are in the tshuva, and now, within a pikuach nefesh context, there's still a reminder, if you can do things in a better way, in a lesser way, and it's not going to have any effect on the, it's not going to impact the effectiveness of what you're doing, then you just do it that way. An element to think about here. Even as he's being completely empathetic to their situation, he's not in any way questioning their sincerity, in any way questioning their dedication, he's offering them a way to do it in a less Shabbat violating kind of way. And you can easily imagine somebody saying, in the context of where they were, why would you want to do that? The answer is because we care about Shmirat Shabbat, and where it's permitted to do things, you do them. Where it's not permitted to do things, then we don't do them. And writing with one's left hand and one good. So today, you know, somebody's going to do it by computer. You can imagine trying to figure out what can constitute a shinui. But whatever it is, he doesn't say you have to, is if you can do it without it causing any kind of delay, any kind of significant delay that matters, then you're allowed to do so. In terms of giving pre-arranged mail to non-Jews who happen to come by, Herzog thinks that since they're already written, there's an opinion that says that there's a question of pseida gadol, of great loss, then you're allowed to have a non-Jew do this kind of stuff for you on Shabbat, since it's not you're not doing any real Shabbat violation. And here he thinks it's a pseida gadol because the family members are worried and they're, you know, distressed. And as he said before, there's an obligation on Shabbos, to the extent that we can, to remove people's distress. Now, there are situations where I didn't get into it, where he suggests that for the Jewish mail carriers, it might be better if the Yeshuv of Kfar Etzion created a list of contact list of family, friends, and relatives, and that the driver would, after Shabbat, contact them and say that he saw them, rather than having the people write letters on Shabbat, because they didn't want to do that, because that would be a violation of Shabbat. So he wants to deal with the problem, but that one could get a little bit sticky, and so whether you can sit down and write a letter on Shabbat just for the sake of reassuring family members that you were okay. And then in terms of sending items that were left behind, he says, oh, absolutely, you can send, let's say, winter coats, for sure. He says, if anything that's needed for the health of the people in Yerushalayim. Now, they're not in a fully life-threatening situation, you would think, except that if it's winter clothing, he doesn't just say coats, like winter clothing, because he says there are a lot of people in Yerushalayim who are living in homes where you can't light a fire from Erev Shabbos, right? That's the whole question. Before we have today's systems where you have sort of self-heating systems that continue on without our having to do a lot for them, there are a lot of people who didn't have that. So it would come to be, maybe you'd burn a fire that night, but the fire would go out, and how you'd keep fire going. There were a lot of people in 1948 Yerushalayim who, once the fire went out, it was just cold, and they had no real way of keeping the fire going throughout Shabbat. So therefore, he thinks it's certainly plausible that you can allow sending along clothing, because when it comes to cold, the halacha is hakol cholim etzel tzina. Everybody's considered in some kind of illness or dangerous situation when it comes to cold, especially children and women who are taking care of children. Because women taking care of children might have a reduced immune system because they're always being exposed to whatever the children are getting, and they might get weakened by an illness, and the children need them, so it's their health, right? But, and you might have said, yeah, but their health, they get a cold, they get sick, so they get a cold, and they get a little illness, they spend a week in bed, and they're fine. He says, no, because the children need them, and therefore he thinks it's all together, and you can certainly send those kinds of things. And besides which, the caravan, the suppliers need to get back, and they're certainly allowed to go back, and they don't have to wait around, and therefore, he thinks you're allowed to do that. When it comes to the airstrip, he says, as long as you think that that a danger might arise, would you stop you from being able to build it in the future, and you need it for saving lives, he thinks you can build it on Shabbat as well. And he throws in at the end, but if you could do everything that you're doing in terms of building the airstrip with two people, doing it all together at the same time, meaning every action being done with two people. So let's say if I want to dig dirt out of a hole, I'll have two people hold the shovel. So you can't always do this. If you can do it and it won't ruin the rhythm, it won't hinder the work, then that's even better. Why is that even better? Because the halacha is that when two people do something together, that's not a full violation of Shabbat. It's when, if they do something that one person could have done, that's not a full violation of Shabbat. And therefore, if you can do that, that's even better. And then he throws in, and remember that as soon as whatever work you're doing is finished, then it's Shabbos for you, and you have to go back to keeping Shabbat. And then he closes with good wishes and blessings that sadly in that situation didn't come to fruition, except that some of them lived to tell us the tale of this great heroism. And it reminds us that it was a heroism, not only a military heroism, that would have been enough for us to be breathless with admiration for these people, but it was not only military heroism, it was a religious heroism as well. The people of Kfar Etzion, who on the 21st of Shvat asked these very delicate questions of Rav Herzog, and Rav Herzog helped answer them to try the best of his ability to help them keep Shabbat as well as protecting themselves and saving themselves. And in the end, their success was that they kept Yerushalayim from falling. So even though we lost Kfar Etzion and the surrounding area for the years until 1967, we did get to keep Yerushalayim, and that is to their great credit. And their credit, as we learned today, is not limited to their military credit, but to their religious credit as well. And it's our great fortune to have this tshuva in Shutei Chol Yitzchak, a response of the day for the 21st of Shvat. My name is Gideon Lustein, with thanks to Rabbi Jacob Brown, with David Kochhauser, and the OU for making this hearing available. Have a good day.